Welcome to Making Sense of MarTech, an irregular set of conversations with some of the most interesting people in marketing, technology, and advertising. I'm Juan Mendoza. I write the MarTech Weekly newsletter. It's a weekly email that covers important shifts in the marketing technology industry. People who work in the world's largest media, tech, and marketing companies read it. You can read, listen, and subscribe at themartechweekly.com. Okay, today I'm joined by Ross Candido. Ross is the VP ANZ and Southeast Asia at Meltwater, a leading media monitoring and social analytics platform. Now, Meltwater offers an interesting suite of solutions that spans media, social, consumer, and sales intelligence. Meltwater claims to analyze more than a billion pieces of content each day. They're delivering insights to marketers all around the world for more than 27,000 companies across six continents. Ross has been instrumental in bringing Meltwater to new markets, including Australia, New Zealand, Southeast Asia, China, South Africa, and the UAE. Quite an impressive list of countries for bringing new technology to them. And he's been with Meltwater for quite some time, so he's got this very interesting perspective on how social media and media monitoring works and how it's changed over the years as well. In this episode, we are talking about the social stack. What is a social stack? Well, it's all the tools that make up social marketing, including public relations, media monitoring, influencer management, content strategy, and the list goes on. There is a explosion of tools that work around major social media platforms to enable great marketing across the social media algorithms. And so we talk about how social listening has evolved over time, the wide varieties of data that help companies to find and attract customers, how insights are gained from media data, and how we socialize on these social media platforms, how that has changed as well. And now I give you Ross Candido. Ross, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for this call because I think social media has and will continue to have such a significant role in our lives, but also in the marketing department, and it is always changing. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say. But before we get there, I mean, your resume is pretty impressive. Not only do you travel and work across a variety of different countries, but you've been really quite successful in bringing Meltwater to various regions as well. But I mean, maybe we can start with a conversation about how you've seen social media analytics change and evolve over, what is it, more than 13 years working in this space?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, social media over that time has evolved dramatically. I think back to my early days in Meltwater, which was back in 2007, I joined as part of the founding team back then in South Africa. What struck me about the technology at that time was that, for one, I hadn't heard of it. And for another, I thought it was incredibly powerful. I think it comes down to our passion, not only for media, but even the power of the internet. Our CEO and founder back in 2001 was already building search engines for online documents. Our job back in 2007, as we launched in South Africa, was to try to educate PR and marketing professionals about the importance of online media. And we think how far we've come from that stage, where we were looking at, is it valid if an article is published online to today? It drives so much of our consumer and buyer behavior. And building really good brand equity online has been very, very critical. And identifying the right partners to stimulate further your brand resonance is a massive challenge.
And it's interesting, hey, because on the outside, you would look at, say, like media monitoring and social listening as like something that's, it feels like it's almost like a nice to have. But, you know, even researching for this podcast, I'm seeing how critical it is to understand how media revolves and change. But what are your customers or prospective customers, what are they talking about? You know, what are they actually engaging with online and how that informs strategy? And then that's one thing we'll really get into in this conversation, is about how do Meltwater customers actually think about the types of data and the insights and use those to inform marketing strategy and what kind of payoffs that has for them. But before we get there, I mean, we need to talk about Meltwater's acquisition strategy. I mean, Meltwater has been, it seems to be over the past few years, you know, it's a company that's been around, it's as old as search engines themselves. But over the past few years, there's been a lot of high profile acquisitions. and building out what I'm calling is a social media stack, which is an ecosystem of apps and services and technologies that help marketers engage with social media platforms, and beyond that, even media and PR as well. But how have you seen this evolution of social media tools grow in the market? And perhaps you can shed some light into some of the acquisition strategy from Meltwater's perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as said, innovation has always been a part of our DNA, whether it was proving the value of online news articles back in the early days to obviously building what was the first social media listening platform back in now 2012. That was very early stage when it came to trying to understand insights that were driven by platforms like Facebook. So a big part of our field, what's made us successful, is our ability to predict what are going to be the major future trends and trying to build products ahead of time for them. The reality, though, is the challenges that marketers face is just really, really big. Constant conversation, which is really easy to drive positive engagement from our employees, is just talking about the challenges that marketers have at the rate of change they're exposed to, whether it's the different roles within marketing that exist today versus when I joined Meltwater in 2007, or the different needs and requirements of problems that marketers need to solve. So Meltwater, our acquisition strategy was to do exactly what you just said, to attempt to build an all-in-one solution where PR professionals and marketers could exist, and then have a left lane and right lane strategy, right? The left lane strategy would mean identify a buyer persona or a company or an organization that needed one part of our tool. That could mean just traditional media monitoring, understanding how our brand is perceived in the markets, what is happening in our industry, and what our competitors are doing in traditional media, all the way to identifying consumer insights on the furthest extreme. But let's talk through that one play at a time. So Sysmos was an acquisition that we did not too recently, roughly about 4 or 5 years ago, and that dramatically improved our ability to understand and listen to social media. The biggest benefits were really actually on the analytics side, where we could now not only track keywords, but also integrate that with different topics or subtags so that our users could go into a lot more detail into the social media content that mattered for them. Because the reality with social media listening is social media is just really, really big. So not only do you need access to all of this content, but you need tools that can allow you to drill down into what are the most important tags or topics within the content that you're searching, as well as obviously analyze and visualize that data in a way that you can spot trends, act and adapt. A really cool example of this is an automotive customer of ours in Japan. So interestingly enough, the entire content and online advertising strategy at that time was targeting 30-year-old to 50-year-old males in Japan. And what they identified through social listening and analytics was a large majority of the audience that engages with their brand organically was females between the age of 40 to 60. They pivoted their strategy when it comes to content that they're creating, and it dramatically sparked their sales in the market. So I think that that's a really interesting way in which having better analytics from social media platforms can help inform content strategies for our customers. Then we had Clear. There was a more recent acquisition around the time of the pandemic. And just shameless plug, we recently won Best Influencer Data Platform at the AIMCO Awards a few weeks ago. So that's a point that we're really proud of in Australia recently. But what that tool looks to solve is not only track and identify which influencers could be good for your industry, but we go into the detail when it comes to understanding the demographics and their audience and who follows their audience. So we can align the strategy of their product with their ideal customer profile. But the magic really happens on the reporting and attribution end, where you can sync in the platform to your Shopify accounts and directly track through unique affiliate links, how your campaigns are performing. So a really good example there is Mary Ruth's. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a vegan vitamin drink out of the US. So obviously Mary Ruth's came on board with Clear. They were able to identify around about 52 moms and healthcare influencers within their ideal customer demographic. And send out an opportunity for them to select products on the website. Those months then, of course, created content. It resulted in around about 1,800 unique bits of content and returned well into six figures of revenue directly attributed at an influencer level. So that's a tool that, again, looks to help propel your brand through identifying and reporting on the right influencers. And then Linkfluence, the most recent acquisition. I think the world of consumer insights is incredibly difficult to tackle. The survey industry, of course, has been a key part of the marketing stack for a long time. And what Linkfluence looks to solve is to structure data in a way that makes sense to your brand and then allow you to constantly listen or survey insights from social media in real time. So examples of that could be Ferrero Rocher looking at Indonesia and what the new ingredient could be that could define product strategy for them entering that market. Or why when you go to Japan and you visit a McDonald's, you'll probably find a seaweed burger on their menu. So again, these challenges are really big, really robust to get ahead of. So the acquisition strategy was our goal to bring this all under one banner. So marketers, irrespective of whether they needed one part or all parts, could exist in one single platform.
Yeah, it's interesting how those acquisitions have played out, because what I'm hearing is that there's all these innovative startups that are launching, maybe they get some seed funding, and they're like tearing off small parts of that holistic social media monitoring picture, right? Whether it's analytics or demographic segmentation, or even just activating data across social networks as well. You know, I think there's so much there in which Meltwater, obviously an established legacy company, a big brand in this space, sees the opportunity to pick up these startups and actually integrate them into the whole for better. You know, and so I think that, like, if we track social media monitoring, it's the sophistication of the tools are getting better. And to your point, there's the automotive brand that can target a customer and realize, whoa, actually, we're targeting the totally wrong customer. Like, the demographics are way off. There's probably like not many other sources of data that will get you to that insight. And I think that's quite unique about particularly social, but media monitoring as well, is that it's the insights outside of your existing data that can drive a lot of value. It gives you an insight that totally flips a marketing campaign on its head, because you're not just looking within the four walls of the data you can collect. You're looking outside to all of the insights that are across social media and generally media as well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely correct. And all of those different data types are having to speak to each other. Like you mentioned, I mean, a lot of companies through traditional media monitoring mechanisms have been tracking their brand and their company's stakeholders throughout history. But also tracking your industry and competitors, there has to be some level of priority placed on this. But then you also need to understand your market dynamics. Right. So as an example, if you're selling a product in Southeast Asia, where you have an average age in markets like Indonesia of 29 and an average of 11 social profiles per user, you're going to have to focus more on social. Markets like Australia, you'll probably have a mix of both traditional media landscape and social, because that traditional media landscape is still so strong here. But either way, social media in particular is growing far quicker everywhere. Australia is another really good example. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this one, but Australian TikTok users have the highest average time spent on TikTok of all other countries in the world. I don't know if you picked that up, but on average, the Australians spend about 30 hours a month on TikTok, and it's by far the fastest growing platform. So it's not monitoring your brand only or your industry only or your competitors only, but it's looking at what are the most impactful social channels for me. How do I survey my industry and take charge of opportunities that might exist through this data? And then how do I create the right communities around my brand to ensure that I build brand equity and can take opportunity that does definitely exist in the world of social?
Yeah, but it takes a creative, strategic mind to see that, I think, Ross. I mean, yeah. Most marketers are so busy just trying to push your next campaign out that it is hard to spend that time in that, I would say, very divergent creative space to go beyond, to your point, brand tracking, sure. Competitor tracking, sure. But like, seeing the undercurrents of like a social media swell of some certain trend or a certain type of content or a certain, even like a meme template, you know, yeah. Like there's all these interesting opportunities. And like, you know, the concept of newsjacking kind of brings that in. It's like, what's a trend that's going red hot on Twitter right now? How can we step into that? And you see some brands really step into that, but it's like a dumb tool because it's a bunch of reach and virality, but you have no idea who's actually interacting with it, you know. But with like a tool like Meltwater, it feels like you can get a little bit more specific around the specific demographics, the interest categories that you might be able to serve content to or create a discussion or participate in a community with. And so I do, it just seems to me like there's so much there. Like there's so much to think about. There's so many opportunities for marketers to invest into it. My question for you, I mean, dealing with customers that use the Meltwater platform, like how are teams usually organized to best use these different tools? Like, is there a specific role that manages them or is it a variety of people working in conjunction together? How have you seen that from an operational perspective, like best using the tool?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of research has been done into the ideal customer profile, right? And I would say a lot of training continues to be done into like what are different buyer personas that exist within the PR space for us or the marketing space. I mean, again, that's the benefit of driving an all-in-one solution strategy is that we can not only appeal to a PR or marketing buyer on what their needs are today, but we can also evolve as that company looks to step deeper into what a strategy could look like for them through using either traditional media or social media tooling. But like I mentioned before, Juan, it could be as simple as tracking performance of a campaign in social, all the way to integrating multiple teams together. And that could be your PR person sitting as one seat on that tool, being the custodian of your brand and monitoring your traditional and social media. It could be an integration with your customer service desk where they use your social management tool to, in real time, respond to any questions that are coming through in customer servicing, all the way to your marketing insights team that might look at deep insight into industry data to try and drive better decision-making through, deeper insight into what that buy behavior might look like, what that audience is, and attempting to obviously build products off the back of that feedback so that they get more market uptake. So there's a lot of roles that this data can service. And often the best part about having a tool that does it all is it can then speak up to C-level and be trackable what these different teams are doing and how that might be moving the needle, whether that be a product placement or brand equity, or even just better community-driven antics around building a tribe that could obviously be part of your creative economy and of course support your objectives within any particular market. So there is a lot in there, but the reality is again, how is the product designed, right? Because that is a lot to unpack. And let's think about the types of data that maybe come out through social. I mean, you've got your text-based posts, your comments, your reviews, and you can analyze it by sentiment. You can analyze key trending themes. You can analyze topics. And that can, of course, drive decision-making when it comes to your content strategy. With images, you can see if there's logos appearing. With user-based information, you know, like this is probably one of the largest opportunities when it comes to public bios. And we've spoken before there, but that in there exists things like demographics, interests, the data that can be used to understand your audience segments and your personas. But then you have to have a framework, right? And that I think is one of the biggest challenges maybe that a lot of organizations face is they would look at a lot of data that exists out there and they think, okay, well, how do I turn this into actionable or curable insights for my business? And the really important part there is to make sure that as a business that you're defining a goal or a set of goals and objectives. So maybe by starting with what are the key questions that you need answered and business goals or insights that support it, right? So, I mean, a really simple example of this are like for a customer could be, what are commonly discussed features of our product or competitor products and how do customers feel about them? And that obviously allows you to identify features or products that are important to your customers and how they perceive them. That can inform product development, customer service, content strategies, plus increase your understanding again of your audience, right? And a big thing that also comes out of that is even your platform affinity. So this is maybe a path that we've transitioned beyond already, but for the longest time, where we were placing ads or where we were placing content or where we were engaging was also not necessarily aligned. So do we understand that our buyers or our audience exists on Facebook, Insta, Twitter, or TikTok, right? And again, as these platforms evolve, are we still keeping up to date in that? And then even with social listening, it's a tough one because again, there's so much content. So not only do you need to develop searches, you need to develop filters. So use specific keywords, phrases, and hashtags to focus the content on what are the most relevant topics for you. And again, we've spoken here about industry searches, competitors, but this is where it becomes really important. And one thing that's quite unique about us is our ability to use Boolean logic. So when you're going into a particular subject, you can also eliminate content that maybe sets you off course. And I understand what you're saying there as well on the earlier part of the call with regards to the amount of time it takes to get that right. But I mean, again, a good example could be a B2B SaaS company. So you would track outside of your brand things like enterprise software, SaaS, digital transformation, define your geography. If you have a particular sector focus like healthcare, you might want to define that as a key search term linked to those categories. And then you can filter by sentiment, identify top thought leaders or influencers, again, monitor competitors and strengths. But then the key thing with this is once you have access to all this data and information, that you act on it. So that's where the visualization matters. So how you are able to visualize all of this content that then you draw through these searches and filters, do you then act and adapt? Or is that something that slips into the vacuum because we get really busy? And I think that that's a really important part to, again, set that strategic goal and focus from the outset. Because you're not going to go to a doctor's office and just ask for the medicine and then expect to be cured, right? And you have to be able to analyze it and work to a plan.
But when you do analyze it, you get one really great insight and it can completely transform your marketing practice. And I've seen that time and time again where, you know, across a variety of verticals, it doesn't even matter what the industry is that this company is acting, working in, they have one really good, high quality insight and it completely changes the perspective of a whole program of work. And you touched on the product marketing and the product management, the influencing roadmaps and the kind of features you're working on. You know, there's something to be said about external insights, like insights that are not derived from the data that you collect from your brand that can transform how you actually think about serving your customers or the right message to present to your customers or even the right products to serve to a customer as well. I think it's fascinating. I think that, you know, there's some meltwater has been around for a long time. And so they've cultivated this practice of collecting that data and aggregating it and obviously looking at the privacy angle, which is, you know, anonymizing a lot of that data as well. But it is fascinating to see how more companies are thinking about this external body of data and using it within their practice to find the insights that you probably couldn't find otherwise. I think it's, you know, it's very hard to differentiate even just an insight from like your own customer data sets, right? like what's in your email marketing platform or what's say in your web behavioral analytics, you know, what's in say your product data. Like, yeah, sure, that's all really helpful. But to actively engage and interface with a market and a media landscape, you probably need those kinds of media insights to navigate that, you know, and that's kind of where a lot of that, as you say, visualization and data management comes into it. It is interesting. I mean, I want to touch a little bit about on that social media stack. So for example, I think Meltwater breaks it down into sort of four buckets. So there's media monitoring, social listening, social publishing, and influencer management. Now, yeah, that sounds to me like those four pillars, they're sort of used by different people in a company. You probably would have someone on the analytics side more on the social listening angle, and then perhaps more of a field marketer or an influencer marketer dealing with the influencer management piece. But how do you see, I guess, a brand dealing with all four of those? It seems to me like it's all integrated into one platform, but like how do marketers really engage with those four pillars? Is that how brands think about say, interacting with media marketing holistically?
Yeah, I mean, the question on how it integrates across team, it's very dependent on the company. I mean, we work with some of the biggest brands, institutions, organizations in the world, and then we have a very healthy SME customer base. And when you talk about the amount of things that, whether it be PR professionals or marketing professionals, have to solve today, there are often cases that we still see where you have one individual attempting to understand all of your listening objectives, then handle all your social profiles, and then, of course, identify the influencers, and then be asked to report on performance of all of these different things. So, look, in its more, I would say, larger corporate sense or larger organization sense, you're completely correct in that there's different personas or roles within the business that would likely spend more time per product. Your insights and analytics is a really interesting one. I mean, one very cool trend that I noticed in Southeast Asia, transitioning from working with Meltwater, obviously, around the world, was a lot of your marketing directors were starting to be data insights background, as opposed to more traditionally, maybe marketing came from either a PR career path or even more a direct marketing-only career path. So how do these different elements integrate? Of course, the idea is for them to be able to speak to each other. So we've spoken quite a bit already about keywords and topics that you might want to track. But you've also got to imagine that when you're in a social management framework, there's also a ton of content that you need to create. So the social media and analytics that come from understanding your audience help, of course, inform what those content strategies might look like. And that saves a world of time. The analytics around measure for social would also be able to dissect your audience and tell you when is that audience most active. Of course, there's a lot of really good data there around engagement per post. And that helps retargeting when it comes to that social media manager within your business. And then again, depending on whether you're B2B or B2C, your use cases might change. Of course, use the example there of large enterprise software company and how they might use data tracking to inform a strategy across that use case.
So Ross, that's really interesting. I mean, thinking about analytics more specifically, there is a really fascinating component to using this kind of social media monitoring and social listening as a way to find insights when it comes to the return on investment questions around paid media and investment in different social channels. You know, marketers spend so much time creating content for social media, and sometimes the payoff isn't massive. I mean, you know, sometimes it's a casino. You know, you might get a lot of engagement with one specific organic post, and sometimes you get none. Sometimes your social media, your paid social media performance is going really well, and for reasons unknown, it drops off or tapers off. And so, I mean, could you help us understand a little bit more about how social media analytics really supports some of those conversations around return on investment and where marketers should be investing and spending?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, the social media part is critical to, again, identify key themes that your audience is actually interested in. I mean, one of the biggest challenges, especially if you're a big brand, you generally have a lot of engagement, but potentially how much does that engagement resonate per individual that's engaging with your product? So social listening, as well as its ability to break down audience demographics and to identify different tribes between the buyer community that you're looking to appeal to. You could be a major sporting fashion label and identify, look, is it team sports? Is it individual sports? Like, what are these different groups that are already looking to engage with our product? And then create content more specifically to appeal to those groups. I mean, you even might identify that those different tribes or groups that engage with your product exist in different platforms, and that might form content strategy across platform. So the idea there is that you're not just creating, scheduling, and publishing social media content, but you're also streamlining social workflows, improving some of your content consistency and how it relates to ongoing conversations in social, so that you can optimize that strategy for different platforms. I mean, even with this, right, the influencer marketing piece is continuing to evolve. I think one of the most challenging problems that we're really looking to solve there is the reporting. I mean, the influencer discovery aspect is obviously great, right? We align your search to not just the influencer, but also their audience, plus provide things like true reach as opposed to follower counts, which is obviously very difficult and often tricky when it comes to especially small to medium brands negotiating deals with some of these influencers. But really the reporting piece is where it comes through. So whether you have campaign performance as integrated into that tool, or the attribution, which is for me true benefit, is your ability to integrate and understand the performance of what you're generating from that campaign directly through visualization and integration in the tool. And I mean, again, that Mary Roos example is a great example. It was literally their first campaign. They identified the most relevant moms and health and fitness influencers whose audience most aligned with their target customer. They connected their Shopify account to Clear, recruited these 52 influencers, provided them with a unique discount code, and allowed them to select their product of choice. And that generated six figures in sales in their first campaign, which I can tell you is a significant ROI on what they spent on the product. And for a company like that, which was testing the market, it would have been very difficult for them to achieve that kind of direct success without a product such as that.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned that, where I was working for a startup years ago, and it was a Kickstarter. And when I came along, they moved from a Kickstarter to starting to sell internationally and like actually ship the product. And Kickstarter, for those who aren't aware, is a way to do crowdfunding investment into emerging startups. So anyway, here I am, I'm sitting here and you know, the Kickstarter is doing really well. And then out of nowhere spikes, like the sales for the pre-release product spike. Like you're talking going from drip feeds of like 20 to 30 people a day to like 150 a day for a week.
Yeah.
And we're like, what happened? What happened? Like how, what, like, you know, we've been doing our marketing, we've been doing some paid media. What happened? But we realized it was this one influencer that we had no idea about, who was the company was a music technology startup. This is one influencer that we didn't even know, do a shout out on Twitter of the product, say, oh, this is a cool idea. And because he was so influential and it was just the right market that followed this person, yes, it just incredibly, like it totally flipped the campaign on its head. Mm. And for me, I was like, wow, it would have been great to have those insights on who those right influencers are and the type of communities and audiences that gravitate towards them, to have that ahead of time, because then you are prepared for when those types of spikes happen. You know, sometimes an influencer will just give a product a shout out because it's a great product and you don't really know where that comes from, you know, but it did take a while for us to dig around and go, oh, it's actually this post that created all this traction and value for us. And it had nothing really to do with us at all. It wasn't instigated by us. It was just an influencer doing their thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's that, even just that component itself, it's like tracking influencers or recruiting them, or where are the overlaps in communities and audiences? You know, that's really valuable because it's tapping into who people follow as an authority voice, yeah, in terms of opinion leading, but then also like people that talk among themselves and the groups that they find themselves in and the filter bubbles that they find themselves in that talk about certain products, you know? So there's all of these really interesting insights that you probably, like, again, it goes back to, it's like there's no other way outside of these social media, social listening tools that you actually get these kinds of really fascinating, I reckon, cultural insights into how people understand products and come to them, but also all the different network effects that happen around that. So that's actually super interesting. I mean, one thing that is quite interesting is how there is different types of data that's available around this. From video, you know, from the likes of TikTok and Instagram Reels, to social commerce, which is the ability to buy products within social media platforms, which is very big in China. From Gen Z using TikTok or BeReal, you know, and all these different new platforms coming out. There was a really interesting social media platform that just sold to Discord, which was a really viral US-based high school app for polling and seeing what people think of you, you know, and it grew to like millions of users within a month and then sold within 2 months to Discord. Fascinating, right? And there's all these trends and different ways to think about data. Like every new social media platform has new metrics and new data points. And it's a bit confusing and dizzying just to keep track of all these different platforms. But could you help us, or perhaps sort of unpack a bit of a framework here of how to think about these different types of data points? Is there ways you can bucket it that makes it a bit easier to access? You say, if you're looking at this for the first time and going, how do we even tap into this type of data?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big question as well. You mentioned obviously a lot of innovation happening all the time in the space with platforms as well. Like there's a lot of differences behind the type of data that you're able to gather as well. I mean, the key thing with Meltwater, and I think that's one of our biggest unique benefits of having our age, we've cultivated a lot of relationships with key publications and platforms around the world, and we're also based globally. So that's allowed us to build really good relationships with different partners. And we also have a significant engineering team, and that is to make sure that we can remain agile. I mean, this is a space that will continue to evolve. There'll be new players. I mean, TikTok doesn't feel like a new player. You mentioned probably a few more of them there, but we have to be able to continue to, again, reinforce partnerships that we have, adjust to how data and regulation changes, and make sure that we can still power all of this external information into a way that supports our customers' competitive edge or supports decision-making. I mean, one of the original hypotheses was banking has shifted online, hospitality has shifted online, but decision-making has largely stayed internal, right? Where we consider a lot of the information that exists within our CRMs or the discussions that happen at boardroom level, and that's what decides our company direction. I think we've already pivoted significantly out of that paradigm. But again, like where we come in, it is to be able to foster relationships and change the way that our platform integrates this data, depending on what metadata comes through the APIs, so that we can continue to provide our customers with best-in-class access to information, reporting around what matters, and tools to distribute and outreach to whether that be influencers or their communities. Because the platforms, of course, do change. We can't control necessarily which platforms would be open, which would be public, which would be private. But the reality is there's so much data that already exists online that through mining public already available data and linking it back to your brand objectives. Remember, I spoke about a little bit earlier, making sure that you have questions that you're attempting to answer, whether that be around your product or your industry or your customers, you should be able to create lookalike opportunities within whatever new platform comes around so that you can continue to incorporate that as part of your marketing mix. I don't know if that answers the question directly.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I think it answers the question in a way that to say that it really, the types of data doesn't matter so much in that it's what your marketing objectives are, right? If it's managing influencers and tapping into that, then there's specific data points that relate to that. For example, you know, follow accounts across different social networks, sure. You know, also the reach and influence of those influencers, and also even just the number of influencers in a category or in a subcategory. What niches do you want to play in, and which influential people are in those niches? Now, you just take one out of many, many different ways you can go about marketing on social, which is just influencers, and already you have a handful of metrics that you can go look at. You know, another example may be looking at trends and seeing, and then you've got a keyword list, and you mentioned earlier that, you know, Meltwater has this ability to use very detailed ways to track keywords using Boolean logic and things like that, filtering in and out words. Again, you know, what's the volume over time? Is there a seasonal aspect to the volume of certain keywords used across media? What's the sentiment or cohort analysis that's related to that? You know, and that's if you want to understand how to tap into the zeitgeist or, you know, specific media opportunities or how you're crafting a specific message. I mean, there's so much in that social media space that it's as complex as any marketing strategy would be in terms of the metrics you would want to collect and what you want to activate as well. And so that's kind of what I got out of that was, well, it really does depend.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, again, like what we've said, that the marketing professional evolution has been absolutely, I mean, epic to watch, right? Like there's never been a dull moment in my 15 years of working with marketing buyers and covering the different challenges that have they've had and how they've needed to pivot. I mean, some of the metrics you of course mentioned there, but it's a wild world out there trying to uncover all of this unstructured data, attempting to make sense of it, and then obviously dealing with maybe some of the internal bias that might exist, which might not relate to what social data is saying to you, and then being able to beta test and change strategy and then measure outcomes. But the idea here is it could be as simple and in your face as tracking your brand. And like you said, assessing sentiment and then key platforms, and then that might inform a strategy to exist more predominantly in those platforms. Another really unique point for that all-in-one platform is the ability to visualize social and traditional media in one place. I mean, generally where there's a major theme, you spoke about spike alerts a little bit earlier, but generally there's a brief spike in social. It then follows with a larger spike in traditional, and then social explodes or something goes viral. So being able to pick up on these opportunities for your brand and company earlier, or touch wood, protect against maybe some of the threats that might exist out there, being able to access both of those is really important. And then everything else from there could be how much brand equity you build through your social media channels, or how you could potentially be saving at a lot of cost, as well as appealing more directly to your customer base quickly by answering questions on social media, as opposed to waiting for hours on hold to a call center. And then the influencer and audience opportunity we've spoken about quite at length, but you're spot on. You know, like the more you can align the audience of the influencer as opposed to the influencer, the better. And I've heard some wild stories on obviously how this has gone dramatically wrong. And mainly that's around paying influencers significant amounts of money because they have huge following. But a lot of that following might end up not being true following. And the engagement that you get on the posts is really low because they're unaligned to your industry or product. So taking that little bit of the extra time to understand the demographic is really important. And then obviously we're seeing now the rise of the nano and micro influencers, right? And these are individuals that you wouldn't find through discovery out there in social media without tools, but often they would become the most authentic champions for your brand. And that's a huge opportunity that is largely going untapped. And then as said, the next or the last pillar of that stack is the consumer insights. I mean, I remember again, existing and operating in Asia and in South Africa, I think in Australia as well, if you look at the eastern suburb beaches over the weekend, everybody's quite keen to go out there and get a tan. But one of the biggest challenges that cosmetics companies have in Asia is the ingredients that are put in whitening creams to appeal to markets such as China. So these are completely unique and specific opportunities for large companies that are operating in highly competitive spaces. And the margins are so fine, right? And then again, even if you're publicly traded, your audience is looking at your product, but then they're not only looking at your product, they're also thinking about not only what you do, but how you do it. And then there's interesting things that come out of that, whether they be energy related or diversity and inclusivity related. There's a ton there, and it is an unbelievably exciting challenge to break down. But I can't see you breaking it down accurately without tooling. And an all-in-one tool, again, that integrates multiple buyers and analytics that talk to that outcome, I mean, that's hard to come by.
I would agree that there's a role in that. There's a role in rolling up a lot of that data. There's a lot of work that needs to happen to ensure the veracity of that data. And, you know, for example, a lot of influencers, they buy followers. It's just a reality. Exactly. You know, there's a lot of bots on the web. I mean, you know, there's a lot of data that can point you in the wrong direction if you're not careful. And so I think that there is, from a quality and a veracity, just on that level, having a platform that has engineers that work on the quality and filtering out the junk and the false followers and the false traffic and the false signals, that is really important, I think, as well, right? Because it's social media data is as complex as human behavior. You know, it's like, how complex is society? It's infinitely complex because there's, yeah, billions of people, you know, thinking and caring about different things and taking different actions in the world. Okay, if you look at it from that perspective, well, yeah, social media is going to be reflective of that. The broader media landscape is going to be reflective of that, which means that there is infinite choice in the types of data and the types of topics you might want to track. But that also comes at a cost, which is there's going to be a lot of junk and nonsense too. Exactly. So I think platforms that sit around these social networks and not just, I guess, look at one specific one, like just TikTok or just say Facebook, bringing those insights together across those platforms is actually a very interesting thing. Just looking at, you know, how do you contain the sum total of all the interests of all the humans of the world, more than, what is it, 3 or 4 billion people use social media in some interactions on their, in their life. So, you know, there's so much there that you kind of need a platform to contain it, which is interesting in that Meltwater has followed this journey for a long time in doing that. But on that topic, I want to talk a little bit about the history of socializing online, given that Meltwater has got all this rich data. And, you know, I think that there is this really interesting angle on, particularly for marketers, on how people socialize, not just the content that they're interested in, not just the influencers they follow, not just, say, the branded keywords or the topics that take off. You know, all that stuff is just usually just noise within the mix of everything. But I'm interested to hear your thoughts on, like, how have we, people socializing on these platforms, how have we changed and how we do that? Now, what have you seen across the many years you've worked at Meltwater tracking how people just socialize and consume content?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and we probably could do an hour-long session just on this shift, right? But there's been a lot of really big milestones. You know, I mean, one that I personally connect with, I studied overseas in a world pre-widely accessible mobile phones and WhatsApp. I'm showing my age here a little bit, but Facebook came around with studies, and I could finally communicate regularly with family and friends and stay connected and have that sense of belonging, right? And I think that this was a massive original ideal that social media had and is very present in the founding story of Facebook, of course. I also think that, like, finding your tribe is far more accessible today than it's ever been before. So communities, I mean, they are forming across cultural and geographic divides. Of course, COVID was a massive enabler to this outcome. But to use the example of Discord there, I think, like, Discord, I came across Discord during the pandemic when you're permanently worked from home, and then communities are being built that directly relate to particular interests that you had and are willing and able to share information, which I thought was an incredibly positive outcome of social and its ability to connect people that are like-minded. Of course, you hinted at it a little bit before, but we have to make sure that we mitigate the risk of creating echo chambers and only existing conversations that reinforce our own bias. And I think, as said, like, a big challenge without tooling is you're getting thrown a lot of your own bias, and it limits how much research you can do outside of your echo chamber. But I think that that was a major shift, right? And obviously, creating really strong communities has been a foundation of society forever, but now we can just do it at a far wider access. I mean, of course, you've probably spoken to this at length across multiple episodes, but the rise of the creator economy, right, and the democratization of the media, whether it's topical, self-expression, creativity, I think people have been given a voice to express themselves. And I think that that's hugely important that they're able to do that. And it's taken shape in many different ways, right? Whether it's building individual brands, and even how individual brands have shifted. Everybody always argues over who were the original influencers, right? And names like Paris Hilton come up, and there was a rumor, I don't know if you verified this or not, mate, but there was a rumor that one of the Kardashians was the PA for Paris back in the day, that Kardashian being Kim. And then Kim, obviously, what she's done incredibly well, I can't believe I mentioned a Kardashian on your podcast, I do apologize, but yeah. I'll tie a bow around this in that, even though she's a massive influencer, right, who's obviously paid an inordinate amount of money, I think what separates her versus other major celebrity influencers is that she's relatable, right? And we've even moved now to a world that, again, pandemic probably spiked this, where influencers not just giving product reviews because they paid to do so, but they're doing unboxing videos, right? Where in real time, you can see the reaction and there's a lot more authenticity. And I think, again, like brands have to need to think about how do they humanize their brands. And I think the creative economy and democratization of the media has been a big part of that. I mean, obviously, another one, access to information and knowledge sharing. This podcast is a great example. We've spoken throughout this about how the marketing professional has had to evolve. And if it wasn't for you spending the amount of hours that you spend mining through all of these changes and trying to succinctly present it back to your audience, it would be next to impossible to keep up with. So knowledge share, I think, is a major outcome. And those are, I would say, the big things, right? I mean, the last you can talk about probably is like that shift from your traditional ad campaigns, with also now consumers just spending an astronomical amount of time on mobile devices or online, right? 30% of our day on average is now spent on a mobile phone. And how we capture the attention of individuals today is so really interesting, right? And that's sent up a whole lot of other questions. I mean, there's plenty going on at the moment, and there has been as long as social has been around regulation and understanding of regulation in the space, right?
Well, I think that there is a really interesting trend which has to do with content consumption on the web, which has changed over time. So originally, when the internet came along and social media platforms came along, what they did was they kind of amplified existing media. So, you know, very expensive media to create, like movies and music. And, you know, you probably remember back in the day with things like LimeWire and Pirate Bay, right? It kind of decentralized the control over media channels, but the media that was being decentralized and sort of shared across social networks was high quality, very expensive to produce content, movies, TV, magazines, journalistic outputs like articles and, you know, things like that. And what's happened was that people gravitated around those things, right? But then over time, with the advent of even TikTok, it's a great example of this, with the advent of TikTok and all these ways to create content yourself at a very low cost, what happened was we actually, I think as a society, we've actually preferred that user-generated content over the polished, created, multi-million dollar budget films. Yeah. You know, if you look at TikTok as an example for Netflix, not anyone can just create a Netflix. Yeah, there's only a certain amount of people with, you know, the right backing and the right studios and the right brand that can actually create a movie or a TV series and have that distributed on Netflix. However, anyone can pick up your phone and start recording videos on TikTok. And so the amount of minutes watched on TikTok is orders of magnitude much larger than Netflix. However, the content is just so different. And so I think that as a society, we've shifted from really valuing like that really hard to produce content to really valuing the day in the life type stuff. And that's what even, you know, we're talking about Kim Kardashian. Sure, let's talk about it. You know, she came of age and she grew her following on Instagram primarily by showing an aspirational lifestyle that you can't see, you can't access in other, and most people can't access in any other way, right? Driving around in Ferraris, you know, a beautiful house, being a millionaire, you know, being this global influencer, right? Like even the TV show that supported Kath and Kim's rise to power was all about their, you know, their aspirational lifestyle of being millionaires. Sure. But now with TikTok, the, you know, most viral stuff is like slice of life, you know, like one category within TikTok is, you know, let me show you around the day in my office. And I am just one, say, employee that works in a tech company. And those things just blow up because it's so relatable, right? And so we've gone from really valuing and wanting to amplify like professionally produced media and content to actually just preferring the dross that comes off the back of that. And Ryan Broderick from Garbage Day, he's got some wonderful commentary around this where he looks at how we've all the runoff, he calls it the runoff of media and content has become the thing that we prefer more than the actual professionally produced stuff, which is fascinating. Again, thinking about how Meltwater tracks that, you know, like slice of life, day in the life type, low budget type content is probably going to nab you more customers on TikTok as, for example, if you would want to go and invest in, say, TVCs or really polished professional content, you know, even that is really quite interesting thing to think about. And so one last question for you as we round out this fascinating conversation on the social stack is actually talking about your role with Meltwater, bringing this technology to different regions. I guess, what is your view on how, what's the best way to approach, say, bringing a new technology to a country like Australia or to a region like the UAE? You know, how do you think about that? What's been sort of the main takeouts from your journey bringing Meltwater to various countries?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the easiest way to answer it is with humility. These markets are obviously incredibly potent in their own right, and a lot of elements of what exists there are highly valuable to a customer story when they're attempting to enter. So I use the same example of what we say to our customers, like make sure that you listen and understand the local market that you're entering as much as you can and connect with it where you can as well, while still ensuring that the values of whatever your global business is ring through, because that is also a really important part, right? As much as you're trying to find cultural resonance in a new market that you're entering, you also want the individuals that you recruit in that market to feel connected to the values of what your global organization might be. But listen, understand. The next step that served me incredibly well is hire A players. Go into the market, trust the market, and hire A players in that market. Create a strong vision and a culture together, because I'm a big believer in culture often eats strategy for breakfast. And great things happen when you give people with huge potential an opportunity.
I love that. I love that entrepreneurial approach, because the people I tend to deal with that come from, say, a global tech company and try and land in a region, I look at them and I'm like, they're so similar to your typical startup entrepreneur. New market, sure, they've got a backing from a bigger company, but the work itself, as you rightly call out, is very entrepreneurial. It's how do we specifically engage this customer and audience in a way that's unique to their local culture and within the local, the channels to reach them, and the features and the product that makes sense within that region. Every region is so different. As you mentioned at the top of this conversation about some of the really interesting insights that come out of Southeast Asia, you know, very different to Australia, you know. And so I do think that you're right that, you know, actually looking for those entrepreneurial mindsets, which is hard to hire for. I mean, those people are usually trying to start their own company, you know. You know, but those people that can go on a bit of a journey, or they've got that spirit of entrepreneurship and, you know, agency, I think it's a great thing to look out for, particularly when you're entering into new markets. And so I like that. Respond with humility, try to really understand your customer in their local context, and then find those right people that have that entrepreneurship mindset as well. Well, yeah. Ross, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, the social stack, I think the big takeaway from this is that it is so complex. It is so complex, and there's so much to it that really starting with something small and growing from there makes a lot of sense. You know, looking at trusted, verified, high veracity data is probably a really good starting point if you want to move into brand tracking, social listening, influencer management, and all the wonderful things you can do across social media. So my last question to you, Ross, is where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, so really easy to find me by searching Ross Candido on LinkedIn. I'm happy for you to share my email address directly if you have anybody that would want to ask any questions directly. So that's my first name, Ross, my second name, Candido, @meltwater.com. And then you can, of course, find Meltwater across all of our social channels. But I really enjoyed this conversation with you today, Matt. I know that there's a lot in there. You mentioned the complexity, but again, the idea is to break it down, like you very eloquently put there. And I mean, the good thing is with over 30,000 customers that we have globally across a huge range of use cases, we're happy to help any customer that would be interested along that journey with us.
Well, thank you, Ross. We are regularly interviewing people across the MarTech landscape, diving into the insights that matter, and people that are really at the forefront of, say, in Ross's example, bringing a global company to various markets, innovating across the social media stack. But we are doing that all the time. But if you'd like to listen and continue to subscribe, you can go to themartechweekly.com or hit your subscribe button in your favorite podcast catcher. But Ross, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks very much. I appreciate your time.